Chairperson, thanks very much. Basically, I think as you know, the intention is that I would come as much as possible when bills are introduced, because the bills are coming from the executive, not from the department. So just to, there are officials to brief you on the bill, but I'll just give some background, and then if there are difficult questions, you can raise them with me. So Ms. Lisa Ross and her team, they can introduce themselves just now. But maybe, Chair, just before that, so there are two bills that are coming. One is the one you got, which is the one on the agenda today on the Maintenance Amendment Bill. But there is another bill coming, which is an amendment to the Sexual Offences Act, and it is to implement two Constitutional Court decisions, Safe versus Jay, which was the issue of the fact that all the automatic inclusion of a sex offender on the sex offenders register was unconstitutional. Their Parliament has to amend the Act by sometime later next year. The other one is the Kelly Bay case, which is the one relating to the decriminalisation of sex activity between consenting children. And that one is, there's more pressure in that I think it is by the 3rd of April next year that Parliament has to amend the legislation, Sexual Offences Act. Why I'm raising it now is that the bill is in the Cabinet cycle, but hasn't yet been approved. It was advertised for public comment by the department, but the expectation would be that it would be approved, or it would be tabled in Parliament before the end of the year. In view of the time constraints, we would suggest that the committee advertises this bill as its priority for the beginning of next year, because it has to go through the National Assembly and the NCOP, and both houses will be in the middle of the budget process. But that as soon as it's tabled, which hopefully will be in the next few weeks, that you advertise for public comment, and you have that public comment early next year, as soon as you can, I mean probably early February, and then you're able to deliberate on the bill and send it to the NGOP. So I don't know if usually the process is to start a bill with a briefing before you decide what to do, but by the time the bill is tabled, so you'll either be, I think, in Limpopo, or you will be on recess with your constituency. So we could have an informal briefing next week, if you like, or it would be a request of when the bill is tabled, can you agree that you advertise a public comment in early February, that you don't wait the next year before deciding what to do. So we're just on that issue. So I don't know if you want me to carry it on to the maintenance, or whether you want to.
I understand that it's a minister, but this is a very controversial bill in a lot of respects. And my question is, why has it taken so long? We were given 18 months, and we now, the executive is putting pressure on Parliament to come early in February to deal with this. The Constitutional Court in its judgment says there's a lot of public interest in this matter. It's not straightforward. And now we have been expected to, hasn't even gone through Cabinet yet, to come early in February to discuss a very controversial issue. You remember when this bill was passed and when all parties agreed to it, the public interest that was involved in it. And yes, we appreciate it's not the government that is this is a result of a Constitutional Court order that there is this amendment, but there is going to be a huge amount of public interest in this matter. So I am a bit concerned that we are at this late stage being sought to look at a bill that hasn't even been tabled to Parliament yet. But I want to at this stage to indicate that there will be a lot of public interest in this matter, and from our side in particular, this is an issue which we argue strenuously from the word go, and it's not going to be a straightforward push through. Finalise it. There's going to be a lot of discussion around that to find ways to satisfy what the Constitutional Court has required. The Court has given certain options that we need to look into. Thank you, Chair. I don't think it's helpful to get into a big debate now on this. We hear what the Deputy Minister has said, and we've got to basically live with that. be satisfied. But obviously the option is to, as has been done in many cases in the past, you approach the Constitutional Court for an extension. That is another possibility. It's been done a number of times by the Department of Justice. Should the need arise, and in view of the public interest in this matter, that is a possible option as well. Thank you, sir.
Members, can't we, there in that situation, agree that we start a process by the ministers, protection ministers, of course, and then see how far we go, and if a need arises to ask for an extension, then we suggest that to the minister. But I don't think we should just say because the time is short and just abandon it.
No, I agree with that, sir.
Honourable Chair.
Deputy Chair, just to thank the Deputy Minister for the briefing. And also just to indicate that, of course, not only in this bill, we will always be in challenges, but let's cross the bridge when we get to them. What is important is that we put the process in motion. Let's continue. We thank you for the advice that we actually prioritize in the new year, and this is what we'll try to do. In the meantime, we're hoping that all necessary activities that need to take place around this bill will happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Look, I mean, the one of the reasons why the poll took long was that the department advertised the bill for public comment. When I asked them why they didn't leave that up to Parliament, they said that the Portfolio Committee asked them to do that. Just to highlight that. But just to be clear, what I'm asking is that because of the time basis, not to rush it, not to come back early, but to say when the bill gets tabled, which will be this year, that you start the process of organizing public hearings for next year, okay, when you come back, because there are a few weeks when Parliament and the committees come back, that you don't wait for next year, arrive and then find, oh, we've got this bill, let's advertise for public comment, and you can only have those public comments in March, and there's a problem. As Mr. Swart would know, the Constitutional Court doesn't like giving extensions. The order was actually to Parliament, so it would be Parliament if there needs to be an extension, it would need to be Parliament that asks the Court for extension. The only thing I'm asking, and I think the agreement is, please, can you start the process of advertising for public comment and oral hearings as soon as the bill comes? Because if you leave it till next year, it will take too long. Maybe if I can move to the maintenance amendment bill. This is a short-term amendment, stopgap, if you like, amendments to the Maintenance Act, trying to correct certain issues that can be corrected in the short term. In longer term, there's a review of the Maintenance Act, which is being conducted by the South African Law Reform Commission, because maintenance is obviously a crucial issue in terms of parents of children and grandparents even needing to pay for the support of their children or, in appropriate cases, of their grandchildren. So, point number one is to be aware of the longer term review. This is meant to be addressing matters that can be addressed in the short term. The officials will then run through the amendments. The amendments are aimed to make the process easier, make claiming money easier. The ones, for example, and as I said, I don't want to take over what they're doing, but this provision for interim maintenance orders, whereby at the moment, I suppose, and from a gender perspective, it's usually the father can delay payment of maintenance and in effect pressurize the mother into probably agreeing to less maintenance than she would have been entitled to, because until the thing is finalized, she won't get paid anything. The bill now provides for the court to be able to make interim payments. There is a provision which, when it went through cabinet, was a more controversial one, not about nature itself, but one aspect which I will deal with, and that was the question of I'll say the father, although it's obviously gender neutral, but in most cases, as we all know, it's the father's, where the father can't be found. that if the mother has the cell phone number of the father, that the court can make an order that the cell phone service provider must supply the father's address. That is so that's to enable the maintenance officer or maintenance investigator to trace the father. The one bit that was sort of controversial, or that there was some concern by some members of cabinet, was over the issue of whether who pays that. The bill provides that it is the applicant, the mother, that pays. And I think there was some feeling that's not fair. Obviously, if the father is traced and is able to pay maintenance, the money can be claimed back from him and used to trace it. But it's basically only three options. If he can't be traced, for example, it's only three options. It would be either the applicant or it is the state, or it is the cell phone service provider. The state, as you know, is under financial pressure. We were told that this is an unethical provision to the Protection from Harassment Act, which also provides that the applicant who's seeking a protection order, let's say getting harassed by SMS, you can approach the court to get the details and identity of the person. So it's already what's there in the Protection from Harassment Act. I understand that most of the cell phone service providers are doing it for free. They may have a different view when it comes to if they get a flood of such requests, but the actual cost is pretty small. It's something like 60 Rand or something small, so it's not large amounts for an individual. But okay, let me stop there. Maybe the other one, just one other to highlight, is the provision of blacklisting, credit blacklisting, if you're a maintenance defaulter. But the official thing can, I think, take the committee through the other provisions. Let me leave it like that.
Any comments on that? I think straightforward. Now, this minister, let me just say for record that this committee appreciates the good relationship we have with you, your minister, and your proaction. You know, last week something happened in Parliament. I was instructed to go to the ad hoc committee. Now I had to get a colleague to take over the responsibility of Honorable Bong. Now I didn't have enough time to brief him. So things didn't go well. And your presence and your intervention was very helpful. But also the chamber, instead of calling me to introduce the reports, they called the minister come and speak and then put the card before the horse and just creating a confusion. But we hope that that was the learning camp. So it was not the minister's mistake. It was not Honorable Bonga's mistake. But your intervention was very helpful and let's take that. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm accompanied by my colleague, Connie van Buren, who's also attached to the Legislation Development Unit in the Department. Chair, the Maintenance Amendment Bill aims to amend the Maintenance Act of 1998. Like the Deputy Minister has indicated, that is as an interim measure pending the investigation by the South African Law Reform Commission. When the Maintenance Act was enacted back in 1998, there was an understanding that there is going to be a full-fledged regime of the maintenance system by the Law Reform Commission, and that is what is taking place now. So currently the Law Reform Commission is busy with a review of the Maintenance Act. Now, coming to the bill itself, over the years, the
implementers of the legislation have identified areas of the maintenance legislation that require improvement. As they were implementing the bill, they would encounter this or that problem, and that way highlighted as areas of the act that needed to be looked into. These are improvements that are necessary to address the practical and technical problems that are encountered with regard to the application of the act. In similar vein, interested parties have also made calls for a sensitive and fair approach to the determination and recovery of maintenance. The bill therefore will address the identified problem areas until such time that the Law Commission has come up with its recommendations. Now, coming to the clauses of the bill or the content of the bill itself. Section 6 of the Maintenance Act deals with complaints relating to maintenance. And clause 1 of the bill aims to amend this section in order to add another ground for investigating a complaint relating to maintenance. Clause 1 will require a maintenance officer to also investigate a complaint related to maintenance where a good cause exists for the substitution or discharge of a maintenance obligation in the case of a verbal or written agreement that was never made an order of court. The other amendment that contained in clause 1 relates to jurisdiction of the court. Section 6 also limits jurisdiction of the maintenance court where a complaint of maintenance, regarding where a complaint of maintenance must be instituted to the district, ministerial district of the beneficiary's place of residence. This setup inconveniences beneficiaries who may be working and residing in different ministerial districts, because the one will have to ask for time off from work or maybe skip work for the particular day. Therefore, clause 1 aims to extend the jurisdiction of the maintenance court by permitting the maintenance court to also deal with maintenance proceedings if the beneficiary works or carries on business in the area of jurisdiction of that court, and not only if the beneficiary resides in the jurisdiction of the court, as is the case at present. Coming to the amendment proposed in clause 2 of the bill, this relates to section 7 of the Act that deals with investigation of maintenance complaints. This relates to the clause that the Deputy Minister has indicated about the tracing of maintenance defaulters or people who, or persons who have maintenance orders granted against them and who are defaulting on payments. Clause 2 of the bill aims to amend Section 7 by placing an obligation on mobile cellular operators to provide maintenance costs with contact particulars of would-be respondents or maintenance defaulters. Clause 2 provides that if the court is satisfied that all reasonable efforts to trace the defaulter or the respondent have proved fruitless, the court may issue a directive in a prescribed manner directing one or more of the electronic communication service providers, like your MTN or Vodafone, your Cell C, to provide to the court with the contact information of the respondent or the defaulter. The mobile cellular service provider may, if they are not able to provide information in a prescribed manner, by means of an affidavit, apply to the court for an extension of the time set by the court for the submission of the information. They may apply on the ground that the information cannot be provided timely, or they can apply for the cancellation of the direction on the ground that cellular service provider does not provide service to the person with particulars are being sought. The terms that would be applicable to that are the same terms that are applicable under the Protection from Harassment Act, like the definition has indicated. Currently, the amount or the cost thereof is 80 rand, but we've been reliably informed that the cellular providers, such providers do not charge for this service. Yes, indeed, the position may change where there is now a flood of requests for to trace people or who have maintenance obligations and who cannot be traced by the beneficiaries. Now, with regard to the cost, this cost has to be borne by the complainant. However, the court may take into account the conduct of the parties to the inquiry and make an order that it is just with regards to the cost of obtaining the information of the defaulter. This kind of amendment will make a big improvement in the finalization of maintenance inquiry and of criminal cases pending against persons who contravene maintenance orders and whose non-availability delays the finalization of either inquiries or court proceedings. Now, coming to clause 3, this clause relates to section 9 of the Act, and section 9 of the Maintenance Act provides that a maintenance officer may cause any person, including a person legally liable to maintain any other person, to be subpoenaed to appear before a maintenance court to give evidence or produce documents. Clause 3 aims to amend this section by providing changes that a maintenance officer may also subpoena the beneficiary of a maintenance order for instance where the person against whom an order has been made is applying for the reduction of the amount of maintenance or for the discharge of the maintenance order. The aim of the clause is mainly to create certainty that maintenance beneficiaries may also be subpoenaed, and in this way defending the misconception that only respondents or persons who have maintenance orders against them may be subpoenaed. Coming to clause 4, this clause deals with maintenance inquiries by the court, and it aims to amend section 10 of the Maintenance Act. The clause aims to amend this section by placing a duty on the court to finalize maintenance inquiries as speedily as possible by limiting postponement. The proposed amendment also gives the court a discretion to make an interim order pending the finalization of the matter where it becomes necessary to postpone it. Before making an order, the court must be satisfied that there is a prima facie case that one of the parties is really liable to maintain a person and that postponement will cause a person to be maintained undue hardship. When the court makes a final order, it may confirm the interim order or set aside the interim order and make any other order that it deems just in the circumstances. This amendment will address the problem of persons who, when they have maintenance obligation, they try everything possible either to defer payment of maintenance or to avoid paying maintenance at all, and thus causing a person who is to be maintained and through hardship, and these persons are, you know, normally or usually your vulnerable with like such as women and children. Coming to clause 5 of the bill, this clause aims to amend section 16 of the Act. Section 16 subsection 2 of the Act provides for a mechanism in terms of which Maintenance can be paid by a third party, for example, the employer pension fund or a provident fund, on behalf of the person who has a maintenance order issued against that person. Now, in the case of State of Nkwele, the court held that a court contemplating an order in terms of Section 16 should afford the employer of a person with a maintenance liability an opportunity to comment on the feasibility of such an order before the court can make an order for the employer to pay on behalf of the person who has a maintenance order made against him or her. Now, Clause 6 to amend Section 16 of the Act, in order to give effect to this judgment, the amendment will ensure that the court hears the views of the person or organization which may be ordered to make payments on behalf of a person who has a maintenance order granted against it. Section 17 of the Maintenance Act deals with orders by consent. And this section provides that a maintenance order may be made against any person not present at the inquiry if that person has consented to the order in writing and proof of that consent is handed in by the maintenance officer at the inquiry. Currently, the Act requires the parties to be present at the inquiry even if the respondent consents to the order or the beneficiary consents to the reduction or discharge of the order. The proposed amendment in Clause 6 will empower a maintenance court to make an order in the absence of the respondent or beneficiary, or even both of them, if the order is consistent with the consent handed in by the maintenance officer at the inquiry. A copy of the order must then be sent on the party that was absent at the inquiry. It is foreseen that this type of amendment will save time for the parties who do not wish to contest the order for maintenance and that they don't need to necessarily come before court. Coming to Clause 7, Section 18 of the Act deals with orders by default. Currently, a maintenance court may only grant an order by default if the court is satisfied that the respondent has ignored a scheme. Clause 7 aims to amend Section 18 in order to empower a maintenance court to grant an order by default if the court is satisfied that the person fails to appear in court when he or she was aware of the subpoena, or fails to appear after having been duly warned by the court to so appear in court. A consequential amendment is made in Section 9 of the Act, which provides that maintenance officer who has instituted inquiry in a maintenance court may cause any other person to be subpoenaed to appear before the maintenance court and give evidence or produce any book, document, or statement. The amendment makes it clear that a person in whose favor a maintenance order has already been made may also be subpoenaed by the maintenance officer, where the person who has a maintenance liability is applying for the reduction of the amounts to be paid for maintenance or for the discharge of the maintenance order issued against the person. This amendment will also dispel the misconception that only persons who have maintenance orders made against them may be subpoenaed by the maintenance officer. Section 22 of the Act deals with substitution and discharge of maintenance orders. In the case of panel versus panel, and this case was decided in terms of the repealed Maintenance Act of 1963, but the current Maintenance Act had a similar provision. In that case, the court held that a subsequent order by a maintenance court replaces any former order. The impact of the judgment is that an order made by a division of the higher court, and now also a regional court when a divorce is granted, is deemed only replaced by a an order made by the by a maintenance court, and then this is to operate. However, in the case of Owen versus Owen, which is a 2003 case, the Supreme Court of Appeals held that an order of the of a decision of the High Court is substituted only insofar as the maintenance court expressly or by implication replaces such an order. And so this clause 9 proposes to bring Section 32 of the Act in line with the appointed judgment. Coming into clause 10, which proposes to amend Section 23 of the Act. Section 23 gives a maintenance order a discretion to give a clerk of the court a directive to transfer a maintenance order from one court to the other. It has been reported that this discretion leads to inconsistencies regarding interpretation and often leads to delays in transferring orders, and that it was proposed that it should be abolished. Clause 10 seeks to amend Section 23 by doing away with the discretion of the maintenance officer and thereby establishing a uniform manner in which files are transferred from one maintenance court to the other. The clause also contains a consequential amendment relating to the jurisdiction of the maintenance court, in terms of which the maintenance inquiry may be held in the magisterial district where the maintenance applicant is employed or carries on business. Enforcement of maintenance orders is provided for in Section 26 of the Act. Failure to pay maintenance is comparable to a default judgment in a civil matter. However, the mechanisms that are designed to prevent defaulters from continuing to obtain credit while owing on maintenance are not extended to maintenance defaulters. A maintenance officer is only empowered to furnish the details of a maintenance defaulter to a business that is involved in the granting of business or in the credit rating of persons, such as credit bureaus, if that person has been convicted for failure to pay maintenance. Now, Clause 11 proposes to insert a new provision in Section 26 so that as soon as a complaint that a person has defaulted on maintenance obligation is made, the personal details of that person must be submitted to a business that has as its object the granting of credit or is involved in the credit rating of persons. The Act currently provides for the attachment of emoluments when a person has failed to pay maintenance and when a court suspends the warrant of execution under Section 27, Section 4 of the Act. Clause 12 aims to amend Section 28 of the Act in order to expand instances where a court may order the attachment of emoluments to include when a court orders the attachment of debt under Section 30 and after hearing the employer of the defaulter. Section 30 provides that a maintenance court may make an order for attachment of any debt at present or in future owing or accrued to a person against whom a maintenance order has been made for the amount that that person owes together with interest and the cost of attachment or execution. The person must pay the amount, or the organization that must pay the amount within the specified time and in the manner described. It is contemplated that this amendment will cause the defaulters to pay their maintenance arrears. Clauses 13, 14, 15, and 16 of the bill aim to increase penalties applicable for various offences under the Maintenance Act. Clause 13 amends Section 31 in order to increase penalty for failure to pay from a maximum of 1 year imprisonment to a maximum of 3 years imprisonment. Clause 14 proposes to amend Section 35 to increase penalty for willful interruption of a maintenance inquiry or obstruction of a maintenance court from a maximum of 6 months imprisonment to a maximum of 1 year imprisonment. Clause 15 aims to amend Section 38 of the Act in order to increase penalty for failure by a third party to pay money in terms of an emoluments attachment order from a maximum of 6 months to a maximum of 2 years imprisonment. Clause 16 amends Section 39 to propose to increase penalty for failure to give notice of any change of address of employment or residence from a maximum of 6 months imprisonment to a maximum of 1 year imprisonment. Suspension also aims to amend Section 31 subsection 4 of the Act in order to oblige a maintenance officer to furnish the personal particulars of the person who has been convicted of an offense for failing to pay maintenance to any business that has as its object the granting of credit or is involved in the credit rating of persons. At present, a maintenance officer only has the discretion to submit the details of such a defaulter to a business that is involved in the credit rating of persons. And the amendment aims to abolish this discretion. It is anticipated that this amendment will ensure that defaulters do not continue to obtain credit while owing on maintenance. Clause 17 creates new offenses to deal with persons who obstruct or hinder or impersonate a maintenance officer. A fine or a period of imprisonment not exceeding 2 years is proposed for a conviction for this type of offences. Coming to clause 18, this clause aims to amend Section 41 of the Act. Section 41 requires a maintenance court to convert criminal proceedings in respect of failure to pay maintenance or in respect of the enforcement of the suspended residence clause for failure to pay maintenance into an inquiry if it appears to the court that it is desirable to do so, or if the prosecutor applies to the court for such an order. Yeah. Clause 18 proposes to amend Section 41 in order to make provision for the trial court at its own discretion to order that criminal proceedings be converted into a maintenance inquiry. In State versus Magabula, which is the 2001 decision, the court held that the question whether or not a court should convert a criminal trial into a maintenance inquiry should be in the form of a discussion and should not be obligatory, as is currently the case. And clause 18 then seeks to amend this section in order to give effect to the judgment of the court in the case by making provision for the trial court at its own discretion to order the criminal proceedings be converted into a maintenance inquiry. Clause 19 contains the short title and the commencement, and the bill proposes that the rest of the clause of the bill come into operation on publication of the bill after offense. And clause 19, however, proposes that clauses 2, 11, and 13b should come into operation on the date to be fixed by the president by proclamation in the Gazette. The reason for that is that these three clauses require regulations, and the regulations will need to be put in place in order for the clauses 11 and 13b to kick in. Now, with regards to the implementation of the Act, there will be a need for training, but not an intense kind of training, because the Maintenance Act is not new legislation. There might be a need perhaps for a refresher just to introduce the amendments to the implementers of the bill. I would also like to add that we have picked up some mistakes in the bill and particularly in the object memo. And we will propose that that be dealt with or corrected by way of community arrangements, amendments when that time comes. Although we pointed out this, the mistake, for some reason they did not make their way into the bill, and but we noted them and we will look into them at that stage. Thank you, Chair.
We obviously support the improvement of maintenance legislation. Just one or two points that I'd like to raise. Now, we know that the 1998 Act was an interim act. We know we had a constitutional court decision in 2002 which raised serious issues. Now, Minister, Deputy Minister, you are new, so I'm not saying it's your fault necessarily, but what has taken the time for, firstly, the Law Reform Commission maybe to start doing its work from the point it was engaged? I see they only started working in 2011. They now issued an issue paper. So there is a delay in time, and maybe we as a portfolio committee should have in the previous parliaments raised the issue, because we know the challenges around maintenance and the need for effective legislation to implement it. That's the first issue. The second issue is, in the light of the Law Reform Commission doing this extensive work, is this, why are we dealing with this bill now? When are we not expecting them to come out with a final overall review? And clearly, if there are short-term gains, we will support that. But if they've already brought out an issue paper, to what degree do these amendments encompass those that are in an issue paper, and to what degree are you speaking to the Law Reform Commission to incorporate the gains now? Obviously that would make some sense. I'm not sure if the Law Reform Commission has been consulted on these amendments. Then as far as specific amendments are concerned, I'm not too sure how desirable it is to refer to the list in the Protection from Harassment Act. I understand the motivation for it. And maybe this is a drafting thing that one can look at. Whether one doesn't rather want to just put the list in this act, so now you're going to have to go to the other act that could be amended. So that is a drafting thing that one can look at, as well as and that's in clause 2, amendment of section 7, the cross-reference to the Protection from Harassment Act for a list, which one could just as well put in this act. So, and then the second issue is the definition is contained of electronic communication service providers. Would that not be broader than a list that's in the Protection from Harassment Act? So maybe that's rather technical of nature and stylistic. It's not a big issue, but just those are a few comments on our side. And then the third point is, have you had any feedback? Were the cell phone operators consulted? Any feedback from them? And was the NPA consulted? Because clearly they are very involved in this act as well, those two. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to raise an issue on clause 2, and that is, whilst the Honourable Deputy Minister makes reference to the Protection from Harassment Act, I want to know whether the department has given any thought as to the impact of the Protection of Personal Information Act on both these acts, or the bill and the act, when that comes into operation. My knowledge of the so-called POPE Act says that only criminal, only in the event of criminal cases would person responsible for the protection of personal information of another person be exempted from the obligation to keep that information safe. So that's the first issue I want to raise, and whether the department has given any thought to that. Then in terms of clause 5, amending section 16.2, the case of Sait versus Mkwele is referred to there. And Chairperson Wild, I think there is a big attempt to, as the briefing says, speed up maintenance issues. I want to argue that the way the proposed amendment is phrased could cause huge delays in the finalization of maintenance cases. I could not put my hands on the judgment itself, but in the way the department reports on it is that the court ordered that the employer of such a person should be afforded the opportunity to comment on the feasibility of an emolument attachment order in respect of maintenance. The way the proposed amendment is phrased is that the investigation cannot be finalized until the comment, either in written form or verbally, has been obtained. And there's a big difference between giving an employer an opportunity to comment and simply precluding finalization of the matter in the absence of comment. Then in terms of the blacklisting provisions, Chair, there's clause 11 and clause 13. With clause 13, I have no problem. But in terms of clause 11, which aims to amend section 26, I think it might be problematic to, as we call it, blacklist a possible maintenance offender just based on the claim by the beneficiary that there had been a default. Simple logic will tell us that in life sometimes you will find situations where a claim is made falsely that there is arrears in maintenance. And I think we should be very careful to blacklist those responsible for the payment of maintenance just based on the claim that there's arrears. I think that would not be fair, and that may lead to problems. Thank you.
By the problem is, you mean the death of the children who are not being maintained. Okay, Honourable Freeman.
Yes, thank you. What makes me smile here is because some of the constitution allows that if maintenance can be also women as well. I do have some comments on this bill. They are one by one. There's a question of jurisdiction. I just wanted to find out, is section 1, yes, I think it's section 1. Let's say it's a wife, leaves home and comes to Cape Town or Joburg, and that is the family home, and wants to be maintained. Is it not possible that perhaps the man will have to leave and go to Joburg where he is in the and you go to that court wherever it is? Does this thing not take into consideration as to perhaps who, because this person is, I understand the logic behind that. The assumption is that people are, the companion is the one that is usually wrong. The applicant is the one who is usually wronged, and that the man must come down. I would suggest that at least the person be given enough chance before and contacted, if possible, before that person is forced to go to a court, so that he talks to his employers and makes sure that at least he gets the leave, so that there should be some kind of communication between the court, the back of the court or whoever, and the person who is alleged to have failed to maintain the person, the whoever is there. The other one I was asking in connection with the garnishing, which more or less like a garnishing, order. If a man is married in community of property, and then an order is given because it is not maintained and it's so-called illegitimate child, what is the position there? Are you going to go and take the credit of the woman, of the wife? What is the position there? I have no suggestion in that at all. I would come to clause 6 and suggest that if there is an agreement, I would suggest that there be an affidavit from the absent party to say I really agreed on that agreement. Not only rely on the signature, I mean, not necessarily the signature of that particular person. And that is where signatures miraculously put in documents and pretending that they belong to so-and-so. I think that it is better if we ask that there be an affidavit. That's relating to clause 7. No, I think I've covered that by asking that the person should ask. Oh, the other one here in clause 7 is that I need to have a personal test on this particular person before we say he has failed to appear in court. Are we having, like in divorce, in the case of divorce, are we going to have a personal test to that, are you going to serve him personally? I want to come to clause 13, which is, to me, is a bit harsh. And I think that, I'm not sure if it is not contrary to Consumer Credit Act. Let's say I want to give the credit, so I simply ask the court to give me, is the person not in the list of those who did not do the maintenance? Yeah, he is, he was. I'm not sure, because then if I'm doing business and I want credit, and so that I can maintain the peace with my children, and because I do not pay the maintenance, then I'm not allowed to have the credit to collect, to be able to assist even in maintaining the credit. I'm not sure if this is correct, and I think that we need to make a research. Let's find out if it is not contrary to RF or even to the Constitution.
Other members?
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair, CM, and colleagues. I may not be aware of processes leading to this bill and the delay thereof. However, let me start by making the following comments and commendation. Chair, to me, not trying to be subjective, this appears to be a very progressive bill indeed. Not because I'm a woman. It's very progressive. Chairperson, is this effect to the rights of children as enshrined in the Bill of Rights of Children, and again to Convention on Rights of a Child? Chairperson, they are very progressive. Where I say is the progressive thing. It was a very progressive feature, Chairperson, of a granting of an interim maintenance order. You know, in most cases, you'll find that issue of this that is mentioned in another case, issue of this recurrent maintenance defaulters who use legal processes to sunset their obligation towards children. So has my saying that this very rich future make me think that is very progressive. And again, issue of reporting of maintenance defaulter to any business, and I'll find with my colleague here, which has its object of granting of a credit or involved in the credit rating of persons. It's also very, it will make us, because it doesn't only relate to men, even women who, in terms of law, are obliged to maintain, will make us as parents more responsible in that regard. And also, it will assist in making conclusion of maintenance inquiries very quickly. So, may I be clarified, Honorable Chair, on Prof. 15, in the case where the third party is a government department or a company, what will then happen? Because you can't imprison a company or a government department. And again, on the issue of legal duty to maintain of parents, I remember the former President de Klerk, the daughter-in-law wanted to maintain, because the son couldn't afford, and then the daughter-in-law also had to bring the former President to court. So the situation in terms of the deal and the existing maintenance act still prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also thank President Chuck and to say that this indeed is a step forward in terms of protection of the rights of in particular women and children in North Africa, because we know that non-maintenance that actually makes the life of women and children very difficult. In terms of the provision on interim order, that speaks to that speaks to banishee order. What I wanted to find out is not that you're not actually calling it a garnishing order, but in terms of the National Credit Act, I think that garnishing order system has been abolished. What exactly, what mechanism are we going to utilize here? If I can get clarity on that. And to say that also what is important to this case is the whole issue of blacklisting of the defaulters, which is good and actually welcome. But there are certain other features that need to be brought in, which I don't know at this stage of the bill whether we might be in a position to bring them in, to say that we need to actually look at the process of restricting movement of defaulters. This thing can actually indicate to us how we could actually deal with this, taking into consideration that you have already made progress in terms of this letter presented to us, and the whole issue of quantum determination, because the bill does not actually talk to it, because we do know that some of the complaints, a lot of complaints that we have received from women had to do with quantum determination. When somebody puts on the table all the liabilities, then you find that sometimes it actually becomes difficult for women to manage to get the money enough for them to, not only women, the person who is receiving a maintenance, enough to maintain the children. And then also the issue of legal representation in maintenance cases. What has been brought forward has been the fact that in some cases you would find that the defaulter of maintenance will challenge the order using lawyers against somebody who does not have the resources to have a lawyer. And the question here is, if somebody cannot maintain their children, why would they be in the position to afford lawyers? And that's why, in this case, looking at the extent to which it may be possible for the defendant to get legal representation from legal aid South Africa. I want to know if it's possible for us to managed to change her for it. But in all, this is a delicate bill, because previously, when it comes to incurring for this, it's only women who could afford that managed to use, for example, the Divorce Act, Section 43 of the Divorce Act, to manage to get this kind of provision, which means that the majority of the women in South Africa are to make future children.
That is an honorable Maila.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me also agree with my colleagues that this bill is quite progressive. But I have just a slight concern, especially on the sections that deal with the increasing penalties for defaulters. You see, my problem is if you imprison somebody who should actually provide to the child, are you then? Then who is going to provide for the child in the Italy? Because the person who must pay is going to prison. So it means the child will not be fed. Now, you see, transporting to me is quite understandable, because here we have a person who is interrupting with the inquiry. This is a criminal offense. I was thinking that especially with clause 30, we should come with mechanisms that will not at the end negatively affect the children of the parents. That's just my concern. Thanks.
It's interesting, you say the bill is progressive. You said, don't say the government is progressive. It is the government that is making the bill. As you see, I want to agree with the Honorable that this is a very complex matter, and it's interesting that the women welcome it, but the problem of children sometimes comes from the women, because what is the meaning of an illegitimate child? There can't be an illegitimate child in the world. That two people came together, produced a child, so that child has been legitimately produced. And at one point, does the child become illegitimate? The problem is here. Women force men to hide their children. People get into marriages, they don't disclose that they have other children. And I think this word illegitimate is to cover up, to assist these people to cover up. So I think we should really use this process to eliminate this concept of illegitimate children, because what damage does that do to these children who are said to be illegitimate? And the UN Convention says every child has a right to a name. Now, if you say the child is illegitimate and the child wants to use your surname, how do you stop that child? So I think this will be a very interesting debate, and that's Minister. I think we must be upfront and say that your ministry is progressive, not the bill. Yeah, thank you very much. Over to you.
I mean, just from a time point of view, remembering that this bill is now with the committee, you will be advertising for public comment, and you will then be deliberating on the bill. So I think in terms of the responses, some of the points raised are starting to most propose amendments to the bill. I would suggest that that is done at a later point, so that what the officials do is respond to issues of clarity. But maybe just a few points to begin with. I mean, in terms of the SWAT of the process, I don't have the detail of how long, whatever. As a former member of this committee with you, since 1999, I don't recall you ever raising this point before. So it's a pity when we bring a bill that you then have to say something negative. But I suppose that's the nature of opposition. But obviously, the in terms of the law reform process will take longer. It always does. And there's quite a significant legislative workload that the Law Reform Commission has, and the department has. So I think it would be good if these amendments are sort of seen as stopgap amendments in the interim, but I think it will be a few years before any legislation from the Law Reform Commission is ready for tabling into Parliament. When you advertise for public comment, Chair, as you know, you are restricted to the sessions being amended. However, if the public, in the course of public input, raise other sections, you can always approach the House for permission to also consider amending other sections of the bill, but just to highlight that. And then, I think most of the details the officials can respond to. Maybe just one point, the issue of imprisonment. Look, that's a maximum penalty. So obviously, the father, the bill, remember, is gender neutral. It doesn't refer to mothers and fathers and things like that. But unfortunately, for men of my and Honourable Mwana's gender, it is mainly the men who default. But the issue of, obviously, if a person's father loses his job, it's not going to be able to maintain the children. But it's more as a sort of a penalty which the court could impose, and hopefully that would scare the father. Because he may now go to jail for 3 years as a maximum, and not a year, that hopefully would tear the father into pain. PPI, Protection of Personal Information issues, look, I don't think there's a relationship, because that act is about keeping personal information safe. This bill is about releasing that information if you have a court order. So the cell phone company, cell phone service provider can't normally just release your details. It would have to be in terms of a court order. So I would think it would be consistent with the bill. And maybe just on that point, on the consultation with the service providers, I can't remember which, was it Mr. Swart? If you do read on page 11 of the memo, a consultative workshop to discuss was held with all role players. It was also distributed to numerous external stakeholders, including the electronic communication service providers and the Credit Bureau. I think, let me leave it like that for now. I think to the officials, if they can respond for clarification, but I think, Chair, it would not be appropriate for a debate now on amendments to the bill, that the committee will do at a later point. But I think, Teresa, if you can clarify. And oh, by the way, Chair, as far as I'm aware, illegitimate, the concept of illegitimate is not really in our law. So it makes no difference. The difference is really in terms of rights, whether a child is with the parents who are married or not married, but there's no legitimate or illegitimate. There are some issues, actually, just not to digress too much, when it comes to the home affairs issues, actually, but the rights of the child to the father's name on the birth certificate, which I think needs to be looked at. At the moment, I think the father's name is only put on the birth certificate if the father and the mother agree, and that's maybe something that the Parliament as a whole could look at. But through you, Chair, maybe just as last to clarify just a few of the points.
Trying to clarify, I just want to say that Honourable Sachs should have said in hindsight. But otherwise, when is this conclusion? You feel that there is an opposition.
There was just the issue of the.
I've got to run through a meeting with the speaker.
Yeah.
Will you excuse me? Can take over.
Thank you. Thanks.
May I continue?
Okay.
Just the issue of engaging with the Law Reform Commission. And Chair, I think the comments about me being negative is not correct. I know we know each other well enough, but you know I'm not a negative person. But my problem is that you, as representing the executive, cannot answer the question as to why there was a delay. It's a straightforward question. There's nothing negative about it. I said I support the sentiment around this bill. So I think it's unfortunate that you became personal, but I know you well enough that it's in jest. But it is being recorded by the media, and I'm not a negative person. So, Chair, I'll leave it at that. Can I just ask, is engagement with the Law Reform Commission, was it helpful, or would it just delay matters further? Because obviously we want this maintenance law to be passed as quickly as possible. It is a good bill, and I just
whether there is any usefulness engaged with the Law Reform Commission at this stage. Thank you.
Honourable Kumlana?
I think before you see the answer, I just want to...
Just a minute, Honourable Kumlana, just to round off this list between the Honourable Swart and the Deputy Minister, you say, I'm not surprised. It's because you're too comfortable with you. It's because the Deputy Minister is you. This is what I'm getting one of these questions. Honourable the DM was a member of this committee, very closely with Honourable Swart. And this is why you get this kind of engagement. Honourable Pumlani?
Yes, sir. There's something that worried me here. I think, if I remember correctly, the imprisonment of a dancer in South Africa was banned some time ago. I'm not sure. Now, it seems to me it's coming back by the fact that there's somebody, if you owe a fresh assault, you can't go to me, you can't go to prison for that. But if you owe vengeance, then you go to prison. I just wanted to check that. As you correctly say, DM, that probably we engage and look into it thoroughly. But I just want to throw this into the mind of the department. Thank you.
Just quickly before the officials, I mean, once this is what, I mean, if the officials are not able to respond on those questions, I will come back to you with the detail. I just, it was a factual issue that you had to say something negative, and it's interesting that in the 15 years that you've been on this committee, I've never heard you talk about the maintenance, why the Maintenance Act revision taking so long, but it seems like that. On Mr. Mpumwana's, Honourable Mpumwana's point, I suggest that it may be something, I mean, look, the issue basically, the difference obviously between an ordinary debtor and the fact that yes, you can't imprison a person for debt, and this is about maintaining your children, which is considerably more serious, I think, and I would suggest it maybe get discussed further with your comrade next to you and other members of your party about the importance of this and why this is different from ordinary debt. This is about a parent's duty to maintain their children. But I think maybe just finish there and then hand over to the officials. And I undertake to, in front of who's here from the media, the City Press, in front of the City Press, to supply Mr. Swart with the details if the officials are not able to now.
Can we get a response?
Thank you. On the issue of whether the Law Commission was consulted and how far it is in the process, in the build-up to this bill, the department put together an interdepartmental working group of which the researcher of the Law Commission who is dealing with the investigation on maintenance of the review of the Act was part of. Further to that, after the bill was put together, and we were consulting, because we consulted internal stakeholders, and then thereafter we went out and consulted external stakeholders. The interdepartmental task team was part of the workshop on which the bill was consulted, and the session of the Law Commission was present, as well as the representatives from the NPA, because the NPA was also part of that interdepartmental working group. The reason why come up with bill or the need for the promotion of this bill is because, you know, the law reform process itself is a very lengthy process. and with the only the issue paper having been issued at this stage, because even when we were consulting, we also received further requests or proposals for further amendments which were not covered in this bill. But because the Law Reform Commission is part of the branch in the department of the legislation development branch in the department, we transmitted those proposals to the researcher working on the investigation. And with the electronic service providers, we consulted with them, we sat with them around the table, and they were in support of Clause 2. And in that meeting, the major cell phone service providers were represented. And apart from just by distributing the bill to them for comments, we also sat with them. And on the issue, on the specific issues on the clauses, such as the comment that was made on clause 5, whether having to require the employer to appear before the court, or that the one could comment on the feasibility of the and order in terms of which that employer is required to be on behalf of the person against whom a maintenance order has been issued. Yes, we understand that, you know, now there's a concern that that could cause delays, but like the Deputy Minister indicated, maybe these are issues that we need to go back and look into. But this necessity to hear the employer or the person who is required to pay on behalf of the person who has a maintenance order, because also there are penalties in the Act that are attached to this failure to pay. To be necessary to determine, or for the court to determine whether the system of the employer are amenable to being used in order to transmit a payment on behalf of another person, unlike where an order is made or to find that the system does not allow for that, but in the meantime there are penalties that are attached to the failure to transmit payment on behalf of another person. There was a question on whether on giving the respondent an opportunity to travel and follow the inquiry to the court where to the province or to the jurisdiction of the complainant or the beneficiary of maintenance. You know, what happens in practice is that when the beneficiary approaches the maintenance officer for relief under the Act, the maintenance officer normally will issue what could be called a calling letter with a date, so that that person will then get an opportunity to prepare him or herself, so that the one will then follow the process to the jurisdiction to where it's called. But you know, I understand that the honourable member has was also to say, can the beneficiary not make or not institute a claim at the place of jurisdiction of the respondent, but those are amendment matters that could be looked into, and that we could come to back to the committee on. See, a child born out of wedlock. Okay, personal status. With regards to whether the one would be the respondent or the person that has to appear before the court would have been personally served, the amendment provides for a situation where a person has been duly warned by the court but failed to appear, and or a person has been served with a subpoena, and the subpoena would be issued in terms of the dictate of the law, because it is served by the police. On the preventing defaulters from continuing to obtain credit, the DTI, the Department of Trade and Industry, is already they also came up with measures of similar nature, and what we are doing in the bill is to align what they are doing and put that into the legislation. Because the law and the National Act already provides for instances of submitting details of persons who are defaulting to credit rating for credit rating purposes. There was a question raised on when if a company has been or have failed to make payments, whether in a company would be imprisoned. There are processes under the Criminal Procedure Act where when a company has been represented and duly represented in proceedings. But this also justifies the provision in the bill to hear the views of the third party who is to pay on behalf of another person on the disability of making good the order. Because then the person who comes before the committee, before the court, to represent that company would have been truly representing that company. Chair, on quantum determination, there is a process in the Maintenance Act for quantum determination where both parties, both the beneficiary and the respondent, will have to come and prove their expenses to the court or to the maintenance officer. And we could give the committee a breakdown of how that happens in the next meeting. For legal representation of beneficiaries, because the way it understood the question well, the question was then who represents the beneficiary, because the respondent will have organized his or her own legal representation. Legal representation is a constitutional right, and the maintenance officer acts an officer of the court, and that person is or that officer is the representative legally of the beneficiary in cases of maintenance investigation inquiries. Why imprison a person who defaults when that person has to keep working in order to maintain the child. The practice for the court, although the because failure to pay maintenance is a criminal offence that has been criminalized by the Maintenance Act, and but the practice of the court is not to imprison defaulters, because for the very reason that they have to keep working and maintain the children. But the provisions are meant to rather encourage the persons who have obligations to support other persons to know that they have that obligation, and if they fail, they are contravening the law. But and hence there is a provision in the Maintenance Act for the conversion of a criminal offence of a criminal trial into a maintenance inquiry and vice versa, and hence the bill now provides that that should be a discretion that is available to the court. Those are the responses. I have, however, noted the comment made, and we'll come back to the comment on those issues that I did not have touched on, like the issue of how quantum is arrived as we would make that going on and submit it to the committee.
Thank you very much for the responses. And for some of the responses, I think you still need to go look into them. In fact, the whole issue of quantum, you're actually saying that there is a provision already. But already, we have complaints of women who are actually saying some of the monies that they are receiving are just enough for transport to go to the magistrate court to go and collect the money. So which means that the money is from the children, they can't do anything with it. That would therefore mean that you need to go look at that section and see to what extent you actually come about with an amendment in order for us to avoid situations of that nature, including the whole issue of illegal representation, engaging in the process, so that you could look into it, because if women continue to feel that when the men come to the country, they feel as if their case is weakened, but you do have this feeling that, or the opinion that the court system itself has got the hands into that protecting the rights of women. Talk to Lucille South Africa about it to see to what effect you can actually manage to do that kind of thing. I will give it a DM. And then also what can be looked at, which is not part of the project today, is the whole issue of restriction of movement of the structure. Over to you.
I can see some people are looking AG, they've been missing your licenses twice. Okay. But basically, look, just on the issue of representation of the maintenance claimants, as Ms. Ross said, you've got already paid for by the state a maintenance prosecutor who will prosecute when there's been a criminal violation. And then you've got a maintenance officer and a maintenance investigator. The problem, you would have heard from legal aid, is the more one wants legal aid to do, the more money one has to put into them. So one can look at it, but I'm just raising that it's going to be a problem, and I'm also not sure how necessary it is. If there are problems on if women, particularly, are feeling that they're not given the attention in court, by the maintenance officer that they should be, or the maintenance prosecutor, that's an issue that should then be taken up. And I would sort of urge, particularly with your oversight work, if you come across to the media, if you come across complaints, bring them to us to investigate and to take up. As far as the amount of money set, Ms. Ross will respond on that, but remember that is also linked to the amount of money that the father is earning. You know, you can't. He's still also got to live. and obviously if the father is unemployed and the grandparents are unemployed, then it's not going to be possible. We're going to get maintenance for that child if there is no money. So the same goes aspect also needs to be looked at. And the fiction of movement, look, I think some of the issues that come up in hearings have been referred to the Law Reform Commission, but if in the course of the hearings you pick up other matters, you're welcome to consider them.
Thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of the meeting. Right.
Are you from this family? Yes, I'm from the end.